Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @YPSport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
Right, so in this latest podcast, we're going to be looking on a week which saw Hull City claim a late 2-1 victory over Blackburn Rovers, Rotherham United fall to a 2-1 defeat when they paid a visit to the Stadium of Light. In League One, Barnsley fell to a 3-1 defeat when they hosted Oxford United. Harrogate Town, Bradford City and Doncaster Rovers all suffered defeats in League Two as well. However, let's kick this off in the Premier League, where Sheffield United fell to a late 2-1 defeat when they paid a visit to Nottingham Forest. This means the Blades are still looking for their first point. What did you make of their performance? And knowing that their next fixture sees them hosting Manchester City, how do you see Paul Heckingbottom setting the team up, Stuart?
Well, on the performance at Forest, for the first 20 minutes, maybe even longer, it was a bit timid. It was a bit poor. You know, they stood off Forest too much, and they just looked as though they were going to take a bit of a hiding. But they got back into it with a brilliant goal by Gustavo Hamer on his debut, and that just seemed to fill them with confidence. And they played much better in the second half. I mean, you'd still have to say that Forest were the better team and deserved to win, but nevertheless, the Blades were, you know, still right in it until very late on. And you'd have to say what tipped the balance Forest's way is that when Forest needed to change their strikers, they were able to bring on the pace of Anthony Elanga, who they've just bought from Manchester United, and, you know, a £15 million striker in Chris Wood, who came on and headed in the winner in the 89th minute. Whereas when Sheffield United needed to change things up front, they had to replace their, you know, already quite, well, very inexperienced strikers with two 19-year-old lads who hadn't got a league start between them, you know, even out on loan. So it really showed you the importance of that strength in depth that Sheffield United don't have. I mean, you know, nowadays when you've got five substitutes available to every manager, you really need to have game changers on the bench, and you need cover for when you have injuries like Sheffield United have at the moment, with, you know, McBurney, Brewster and Jebison out. And it was another reminder, as if anyone really needed reminding, that you know, they've got a lot of work to do in the last few days of the transfer market to get that part of the squad particularly just up to strength. Because, you know, you're coming up against teams so often who've got that strength and that depth. You know, even some of the, you know, so-called lesser teams in the division, they all have those sort of players to call upon that strength and depth. You know, they invariably all have quality players in the first team as well. And at the moment, as things stand, Sheffield United just aren't in that league on paper, and it's something they've really got to address as best they can on a limited budget very quickly.
Yeah, it's been the narrative of the summer, hasn't it, for Sheffield United? Obviously, the story of the year has been the obviously on-off uncertainty about the takeover, but specifically in terms of the here and now and what Paul Heckingbottom's dealing with. You know, he just quite simply hasn't enough bodies in, has he? And you know, you look at the sides who got promoted with Sheffield United, and even Luton and Burnley. You know, their signings count into double figures. They haven't sort of lost any of the main players as well. I think you've got to factor that in as well with Sheffield United. They've obviously lost Madai and lost Berg as well. So, you know, seriously behind the eight ball. As Stuart said, they're having to blood young players who some of whom aren't ready, really. They need some wool on the backs in championship level, really. But it's a case of needs must at the minute. And, you know, if Sheffield United are going to, you think it's probably fair to say, give themselves a fighting chance, they really do need to have a good final week of the window. You know, they look pretty short. You know, three or four players, arguably, potentially, you know, even a couple more. But, you know, you look at this, I suppose, you know, when times are difficult, the fixtures don't particularly help you, do they? They've obviously got Man City coming up. I think they've got Spurs and Newcastle a bit further down the track. So if they don't get a win in the next four or five, then, you know, the narrative of the summer will turn into the narrative of the season. So you just hope, as far as Paul Heckingbottom's concerned, he's a manager. I don't think he's had particularly too much luck in his times at some of his previous clubs in Yorkshire, at Leeds and Barnsley. You know, he's desperate to make inroads and to give themselves some sort of chance.
Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it, Liam? Give themselves some sort of chance. If ultimately, you know, they're not good enough and they get relegated, but they've given it their best shot.
Absolutely.
Well, that's one thing. But you know,
with them.
Exactly, and you know, we know the effort will be there. There's been no complaints on that score in the last couple of games. But they just need that backing from the boardroom. And you know, you reeled off some pretty daunting fixtures there, but to me, the one that really leaps out is Everton on September the 2nd.
Yeah.
You know, deadline this year, of course, is 11 o'clock. Deadline this year, of course, is on September the 1st at 11 o'clock. But to me, the Blades should be looking at their deadline as noon so that they've got players available to play in that game against Everton. I mean, Everton also look underprepared, you know, but they're building from a much stronger position just for having all those consecutive years of Premier League football. And Sheffield United, with every game that they go into on demand, it's just a game written off. I mean, their target is probably to get 35, 36 points over the course of 38 games. Well, if they don't do their business, you know, the majority of their business to the last couple of hours of the transfer window, you've written off four of those games already. You've that's 12 points you effectively can't play for. And they need to go into that Everton game with a couple of signings on the pitch that just, you know, give some positivity to the Bramall Lane stands, give some belief to the players and strengthen that team and that bench. They really need to do it. And, you know, right now, it just feels as though, although there isn't much money, what money there is hasn't been spent quickly enough. And it just feels as though the board are letting Paul Heckingbottom down at the moment. I know it's difficult circumstances for them. And, you know, Heckingbottom is very understanding of it, but really they've not given themselves the best chance in these first couple of games of the season. I don't think there's much they can realistically do between now and the Manchester City game, which is going to tip the balance. But nevertheless, the sooner they can get people in the door, the sooner they can be bedded in for that Everton game and those other daunting games to come that Leon outlined.
Yeah, it's just giving themselves some hope, really, isn't it? I mean, there's a fair chance, sure, that this division, I mean, usually you get leagues within leagues, and I think there'll certainly be one there down at the bottom end. Obviously, Sheffield United, Luton, Burnley, a few others as well will be battling for the lives, and every point is a precious one. It's something that Paul Warne, when in his time at Rotherham United, similar circumstances, albeit in a division below when Rotherham in the Championship, you know, points are precious, and they obviously brought. I mean, Haim is a standout buy, isn't he? I was surprised that one or two other teams in the lower half of the Premier League perhaps didn't have a dabble for him. So, you know, fair play to Sheffield United for getting that over the line. I think that's a really good signing. But you've got to back it up, haven't you? You know,
exactly.
They've brought him in now. You know, that's not enough. They need a few. You know, a few more. It's a good start, but you know, they're still not. You know, painfully short, and the clock's ticking, and they've just for the sake of everybody concerned, and you know, Stuart's right to, you know, mention the Sheffield United fans as well. They just want a little bit of hope, don't they? You know, if they get that they will get behind them. And Bramall Lane is a terrific atmosphere. A lot of people speak about, you know, Selhurst Park in that respect, a little bit old school and parochial, and it's, you know, cliche is about the 12 man, but it, you know, Sheffield United will need that, and the fans just need a little bit of hope, something to buy into. They're not expecting miracles, but just to give themselves some sort of chance, and you know, and they'll provide the support, you know, the requisite support that they need, but they need to be infused.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's only what, 3 years ago that they had that really, you know, demoralising season where, you know, you knew long before Christmas they were going to go down. You know, I covered Sunderland many years ago when they had their 15-point season in the Premier League, and they're just so depressing. They took the life out of the club, and they can have a knock-on effect for following seasons. So, you know, as Leon says, you've got to be realistic. They're going to be up against it this season, come what may. Because this takeover hasn't happened, you know, they've gone to a gunfight armed with a knife. There's every chance they'll go down, but at least if they can fight their way through it and show some fight, that's what the fans need. And you know, if they get that, they might be able to exceed expectations as they've done in the past. Yeah. I'm certainly not writing anything off, but they've got to give themselves a chance as the starting point. They've got to give the fans hope, because they complain quite rightly in that relegation season that the fans weren't able to play a part because, you know, they were locked out because of of COVID and what have you. Well, this season they are allowed in the ground. They've got to bring them into the equation, and say, by giving them something to cling to.
I mean, it's funny, just quickly, you sort of look at, no one particularly looks at league tables at this time of year. It can be sort of faulty. Look, we're down there only one or two games in, you know, Everton, Wolves, Burnley, Luton, Sheffield United. Couple of places higher up, Fulham, you know, they've obviously lost Mitrovic. That'll be a big loss for them. One or two teams invariably sort of drop into it, don't they, from the previous season, could well be Fulham and Wolves. So you've sort of got to look at it in that respect. Sheffield United, I don't think they'll be too short of company. I don't think it's going to be a straightforward season for probably, you know, four, five, possibly six sides. And I think it's got the makings of a mini league, and who perhaps has the best sort of quota of wins, points in the games between them. It could really sort of potentially boil down to that.
Absolutely, and that's why I had flagged up that Everton game, because they're in that mini league with them, aren't they? You know, Everton are in a mess too. I mean, you know, with the greatest of respect, you never budget for anything against Manchester City. I mean, you ask Mark about how they'll set up in that game. Exactly. It's just a free hit. And obviously, Sheffield United played Manchester City in the FA Cup last season. So we got a few ideas as to how they might set up. You know, they made a bit of a surprise that day, dropped Ollie McBurnie and played Daniel Jefferson up front, so that they had that pacey man up front. And then early on, knocked a couple of balls down the channel between the left back and left centre back. And had a bit of joy there for a few minutes. Well, you know, they've got the pace now, and Osula and Traore up front, that's not really an issue. But they don't have that quality. You know, you're going to get very few chances to score against Manchester City. You know, so to be going into the game with a couple of strikers who haven't got a Premier League goal between them and not much from the midfield either, it is a big risk. You've got to do everything you can to help yourself out. But as I say, it's more an exercise of getting people in the building so they've got that preparation time for the Everton game. It's okay saying, oh, well, we signed someone at, you know, 11:30 on the Friday. He's going to be available to face Everton on the Saturday. But obviously, if you can sign him a week earlier, he's got a week's learning the tactics, getting to know his team. That's really the emphasis that Sheffield United have to have at the moment. That's what the manager is pushing for. But, you know, transfer windows can be so frustrating for fans of all clubs, because you're constantly screaming at your team, just saying, why aren't you getting things done earlier? And that's definitely the feeling at Bramall Lane right now.
Now we turn to the Championship and Leeds United, who had to settle for a point when Luke Ayling helped secure a 1-1 draw against West Bromwich Albion. It's fair to say that the match saw West Brom take the lead in controversial style. However, Luke Ayling was able to grab a 72nd minute equaliser. What did you make of the team's performance, and what news do you have regarding the player situation at Elland Road, Lyon?
Yeah, I think in the circumstances, you can't a sort of flowing, firing all cylinders sort of version of Leeds at this early part of the season. There's a lot of extenuating circumstances. I've got some players who obviously don't want to play and be there. Obviously, like there has been a development with Gonzo, talking about him being reintegrated, but that would be certainly good to see. But it's I think actions are going to be speak louder than words in that regard. There's a lot of players who were injured. They're obviously short in terms of numbers. So I think you spoke about Sheffield United. I think the fans as well. I think they're quite realistic in early season. It's difficult, and it's just about showing some sort of esprit de corps, some sort of organisation, heart and spirit. Obviously, it was demoralising at the end of last season. But I thought Leeds showed that against West Brom, to be fair. You can't expect too much at the minute. They obviously went behind. They were pretty unlucky in the respect that there's no VAR in the Championship. It would have been chalked off in the Premier League. It was clear handball from Santi Thomas. But Leeds didn't feel sorry for themselves. It's something that Daniel Farke has spoken about consistently. They rolled up the sleeves and got a deserved equaliser. I love the look of determination on Luke Ayling's face when he scored the goal, got the ball straight back up the other end of the pitch. And it was good to see. We'd finished it off nicely if proved to it. Let's go that chance at the end. So, but I think there were heartening signs. It's been a bit of a perfect storm. Leeds are having to dig in, and I think with the Gonzo situation, like I've said, you're just going to have to wait and see. There's obviously noises about him coming back into the fold. Obviously, Leeds have got a very difficult game against an impressive Ipswich side on Saturday. Will he have done enough to be on the bench and maybe have a cameo? And then there's obviously the cup game in midweek against Salford. That might be an opportunity to look at him from the start. But for me, actions are going to speak louder than words with that one.
Yeah, and I think on that, and because of that, I think we know Nonto hasn't really trained properly for a couple of weeks because of this, this saga about him trying to get away from the club. But I think it's important he does get some significant minutes on the pitch in the next two away games, as much as anything, just to see how the fans react to him, because I think that's going to be a big thing. And as Leon says, actions speak louder than words, to see if he actually is going to play with the commitment that his words haven't been showing for the last couple of weeks. So I do think they need to sort of get him on the field to just suss him out a bit better. But
yeah,
I mean, one big factor in Leeds' favour, obviously, when they brought Daniel Farker in, we all said, oh, this is great. He's got this experience of winning the Championship. That's a real bonus for them. I don't think any of us really factored in, but it's been really important. He's had experience of these Nonto type situations as well, and he's frankly won them. He had a situation at Norwich a couple of years ago where Cantwell and Buendia seemed to be of similar mindsets to Sinisterra and Nonto right now, and he managed to keep both of them and get some really good performances out of them to win the league. So I think that experience unexpectedly is going to be a real trump card for Leeds. And as I've said before, I think once things settle down, I think they'll be in a reasonably good position for the fact that Daniel Farke's in charge. And I've got a lot of confidence that they'll be able to make the most of what he's got. The question is how long it takes to settle down, because it's not just a case of getting the squad in place. And say you don't want to be playing in a situation at the first couple of games back at Elland Road where you've got fans booing Nonto or Sinisterra if they're still there because of everything that's gone on. It's understandable, but you obviously don't want that atmosphere. So it's just a question of how long things actually take to settle and how much ground is to be made up by that point.
I just don't think he's losing so much, Stuart, by staying until until January. Yeah. You know, he could at least say, look, give it until January. We're going to get injured players, but I think there's still a fair chance Leeds have, they've obviously got a bit of money in now with Adams going to Bournemouth. You know, the noises and everything sort of seems to suggest they're going to be quite busy at the end of the window. You know, hopefully get a few sort of players who can make an impact at that level, get the injured players back, build the foundation, and then hopefully grow into the season, and hopefully things all start to roll. I mean, it does look like one of those seasons that if Leeds are going to do anything, I think by common consent, I think even probably Farker deep down without probably admitting it, it will be in the final third, really, isn't it? When you often get one or two teams in the Championship who can finish like with a wet stay. So I think that's Leeds' best bet. Obviously, a lot will be down to do what business to do, late in the window. But I think all is not lost. And I think that it has been a difficult start. It always was going to be. If they could manage just to chip away, if they get a draw at Ipswich, that'd be a really good result for me. They've got Sheffield Wednesday, who've been struggling. That's the final game before the first sign-off for the international window thing. Just chip away, finish sort of lower mid-table by the time that the break begins for, as far as their sakes, I think that's a fair achievement in the circumstances. And obviously, hopefully buoyed by some new arrivals. They've been linked to quite a few players. I think that Lewis Nolte in particular would be a terrific sign, and if Leeds can manage to pull that one off, it's... So, yeah, that's how I would say he's like, probably ego's probably taken a little bit of a bruising by obviously witnessing the fans sort of singing against him on Friday night. And, justifiably so, you have to take that on the chin. And the timing was lousy, wasn't it? On the, I'm not saying it was his doing or not, but it did sort of stink on the eve of a big game. So we'll have to see how the developments sort of transparent in the day, some reception he does get if he's involved at Ipswich.
Yeah, I mean, we all know the excuse. We've heard it 1,000 times. Oh, I need to get playing in the top division for the sake of my international career. But, I mean, they've changed manager since, or they've changed new manager.
He's gone, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, but nevertheless, Nunt have got in the Italy side on the back of playing in the Swiss League. That's blown out the water. If he goes to the Premier League, back to the Premier League, he only made 15 starts with Leeds last season. It's going to be a similar scenario with whoever he goes to, I would think. If he does go to Everton, who are the club, who seem keenest on him, as we've already said, Everton are in a bit of a mess. They're going to be fighting a relegation battle. He's not exactly going to be in a great situation. Why not stay at Leeds, where he will play regularly if he gets his head right? And then he should, with his ability, score a lot of goals. I think that will count for a lot with whoever the next Italy manager is. As Leon says, it might get him a move in January. It might not. It might get him a promotion and back to the Premier League. Who knows? But, at the moment, he's only done his reputation with the Leeds fans unnecessary damage. I imagine he's been poorly advised. The events of Tuesday evening seem to suggest that somebody's spoken a bit of common sense into him, and we might be able to see a resolution. But this saga has yo-yoed quite a bit, and there could yet be twists and turns. But it's in everyone's interest. He signed a 5-year contract. It's in everyone's interest that he just gets his head down and works hard for Leeds United. And if he does that, in time, the rewards will come, and it's as simple as that. You signed a contract, fair enough. If the club were willing to let you go, you can go. But if not, you have to honour it. That's the deal. That's why you get, that's why they offer you all that money to stay for 5 years. Just be a grown up and get on with it. We've already seen the likes of Ampadu and Byron come in. Every time these names come up, it seems like it's a name where you think, well, that's a really sensible signing for the Championship.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got a lot of faith now that Daniel Farke's finally got that money in for Tyler Adams, that he'll not just be able to find good players, but realistic, sensible Championship signings with the sort of mindset that Leon's talking about to blend into that group. I do feel that the Adams signing has come at just the right time in terms of probably just giving Farker enough time to identify and actually get those players. I mean, even Max Ahrens, who, you know, by all accounts came very close to signing for Leeds and then did a U-turn to go to Bournemouth, you could have seen him as well, mm-hmm. had he been of the right mindset to come, being another one who you'd say, oh yeah, that's a really good Championship signing. So I do believe that Farker will be able to bring in the right type of players to get the sort of group he needs, but he does need to evaluate, you know, where Nonto and Sinisterra's heads are, maybe a few others as well, because there's no point having talented players who are going to poison that dressing room. And say if Nonto's got his head right, brilliant, because the talent is certainly there, but they do need to make that evaluation quickly.
Next in the Championship is Sheffield Wednesday, who fell to a 1-0 defeat when they welcomed Preston North End. Chisco Munoz's side have yet to secure a point so far this season, and with the Owls having lost their first three league fixtures for the first time since 2007, are Wednesday fans justified in starting to feel a little worried, Stuart?
Yes, they are. I mean, you know, they've lost the first three games, but I think this is going to be a real test of patience for them, you know. And I mean, Leon made a very valid point. Leon was at the Hull Sheffield Wednesday game the previous week and said in his match report, what is Cisco Ball? You know, we haven't really seen any signs of where this team is going yet. Well, in fairness to Wednesday, for about half an hour of that Preston game, between about the 15th minute and half time, we did actually see it. It was quite fluid, positive, passing football. Barry Bannon got involved in the game. Momo Diaby had a great debut, and it was a real worry that he went off with an injury that looks quite bad. But the issue for them on that Saturday was they conceded a sloppy set-piece goal in the 50th minute, and it just seemed to burst the balloon, and they never got that back. But, you know, the reality is when you've got a new manager with a new coaching staff and 10 new players, it is going to take time to gel. The problem is we all know what football's like. You know, we went down this road with Huddersfield this time last season. Is the manager going to get the time? You know, are the fans and the chairman and, you know, and the journalists and everyone going to show the patience for this to come together? And ultimately, is it going to happen? I saw enough on Saturday to make me think that, yeah, there is the makings of something there. Say, Momo Diaby's injury will be a big blow, because I think he was probably a big factor in taking them up a level. So fingers crossed that it's not as bad as it looked, but there were signs there that things could come together for them. Again, like their neighbours across the city, the worry is how much are you going to give the other teams a head start before you get your act in order? But you could see them working towards something at least, which is not something, you know, that was evident at all the previous week.
I think like a lot of managers, Stuart, it'll be Munoz will be keen to get to the international break, won't he? He'll know what he's working with. He'll hopefully have, you know, a fair bit of time at the training ground at Middlewood to really bed in his principles and a route forward. Really, you know, obviously things are fluid for a lot of Championship clubs. I'm sure we'll go on to speak about a few more. You know, in terms of, like, sort of Rotherham, in terms of knowing really what you're actually dealing with, and just about with Leeds, you just got to, hopefully Wednesday will provide themselves with a little bit of hope going into when it really sort of does begin, if you like, from the middle of September onwards. That's when you can really gauge and judge teams in the Championship. But, you know, as Stuart rightly says as well, you know, you need to get provide the confidence by getting a win or two along the way, or else, you know, things can take a real turn for the worst. And, you know, you look at Sheffield Wednesday, only a few weeks into the season, League One home form was the bedrock, wasn't it? In terms of obviously getting promotion last season, and even in the season before, there were you know, the form at Hillsborough just sort of supported them, so it was such a constant, wasn't it? I think they only lost two or three games in two seasons in the league, and now obviously two games into the Championship season at home, they've lost both of them, and so obviously that's food for thought, and a bit of a of a confidence shaker. I just sort of worry. I look at the recruitment with Wednesday, and it just, some of it just smacks a little bit of a panic for me. They've obviously signed some players who've been at big clubs on the continent, and you know, I do hope it actually works for them and they can prove themselves to be Championship players. But some of them look a little bit of taking a punt on one or two of them, and there's not really that sort of Championship bona fide experience, and it's, you know, I think it's asking a lot for them to sort of gel straight away. And hopefully for Wednesday's sake and Munoz's, they'll find the answers in the international break, and then show some positivity, which we'll need to do when it starts again in mid-September, because I think fans are fairly understanding that at the minute. I think they realise that, you know, it was a difficult sort of summer. They sort of ended the season late, obviously getting through the playoffs. There was the, obviously, Darren Moore leaving the club, and there was, you know, it was an uncertain time, and it was, you know, difficult for Munoz coming in that regard. And there's a certain amount of patience, but it's certainly not going to be finite, is it? And they'll need some sort of to see some progress once we get into the autumn.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you take what I said earlier about Daniel Farke's transfer targets, it's almost the opposite with Sheffield Wednesday. There's so many unknown quantities, yeah, aren't they? You know, new to the, yeah, league, and some of the players he has got. I mean, Reece James is signing, you know, seemed to be in the pipeline before he arrived. Yeah, but it made sense, exactly. But neither James nor Marvin Johnson have been involved very much at all in the opening weeks of, yeah, the season, and you just feel you maybe need more of a blend between those guys who understand the level and those guys who are learning it and might ultimately be very good at it. But right now, I'm still getting a feel for it. You know, obviously there are some in the team. You know, there's lads like, you know, but there's, you know, Barry Bannon and George Byers made a big difference on Saturday, and obviously Bambo Diaby have been at Preston and all this sort of thing. So they're not completely devoid of it, but you just wonder if they need the balance slightly more to sort of you know, proven players who understand English football, certainly in the early part of the season, and maybe bring some of these players who are still learning about it later on. But you know, in terms of learning, I mean, you know, you think of Barnsley, they've actually really struggled since the opening day, but that they've had a big turnaround, they've had a new manager as well, and that opening day 7-0 win for them was just a bit of validation that, look, this manager knows what he's doing, stick with it. Munoz just needs that moment, really. You
know, some credit in the bank, doesn't he?
Credit in the bank, exactly. And you know, when they came off at half time at 0-0 against Preston, they were applauded off because the fans, it felt like the win was coming and they were building towards it. But the second half was so frustrating, they ended up getting booed off at the end of the second half, not quite as loudly, but booed off. And it's like, you know, that good work has just been forgotten about. They just need something in that points column to say, yeah, you know, there is something to build on, we are up and running, and to convince the players as well.
And finally for this week, we turn to the clash between Middlesbrough and Huddersfield Town, which ended in a 1-1 draw at the Riverside. This result leaves both sides in the relegation zone without a win. I suppose things can only get better from here, Leon?
Well, you would sort of think that on some levels, Mark, but I actually had the misfortune to cover the game between them last... it was relatively early last... you know, in the early sparrings of last season, albeit a little bit further on. I think it was in October.
Mm-hmm.
And that was dreadful. Both sides were in the bottom three, and they played like two sides in the bottom three, frankly. There was a lack of fluidity and conviction, confidence. And to be fair, obviously, both sides started again. I mean, obviously, it's a bit after, in certain respects, to look at the league table this early, but they were both in the relegation sort of area on the Saturday. It was a really entertaining game. Middlesbrough probably should have won it. They certainly had a great chance at the end on Sam Silvera. He missed a big chance against Coventry in the previous game when the game was sort of in the balance, and it was almost a carbon copy, really. He sort of skied it when he should really showed a lot more calm, and he would have won the game for Borough. And I don't think Huddersfield could have grumbled too much, but having said that, there was quite a lot of positivity for Town as well. I sort of thought beforehand they might come with a bit of a defensive mindset and trying to sort of spoil things, but they took the game to Middlesbrough in certain regards. They were on top at the start of the second half. They scored. It was slightly fortuitous, the goal, but there was sort of nothing lucky about, you know, the fact they started the second half really well and they sort of had the foot on the throat of Borough a little bit and had the chance to sort of take a stranglehold on the game. But, you know, fair play to Middlesbrough, they got back and it was a very good equaliser from Hayden Hackney. But there was good elements across the pitch. I Huddersfield had played well the previous week by all accounts against Leicester, who, you know, they're going to be up there, though they are at the minute, and I think they'll certainly last the course. I think they've got too much quality, and Huddersfield were unlucky. It was an error from Lee Nichols, but he bounced back as good players do. He made three good saves on Saturday. Matty Pearson was excellent, got his blocks and his tackles in. Neil Warnock had said to him before, and keep it simple, and he you know, followed that to the letter. Jonathan Hogg was good. Jack Redoni and Sauber Thomas as well. His work rate was the big sort of takeaway, I thought, from the game. He obviously got a bit of kudos for the goal that went in off Dale Fry, but it was just his tracking back and his sort of desire. You could just see, you know, Warnock's fame, man management. He's obviously tapped the right buttons with Thomas, with his whether he's put his arm around him or had a few choice words in his ear, I don't know, because he did speak about Thomas recently and said that he could start an argument in an empty room. He said that in a nice way, that said, but whatever way he's doing it, he's getting he got a tune out of Thomas on Saturday. So yeah, I thought Town played reasonably well as an away side. Middlesbrough, yeah, some good contributions. The lad they've signed from Italy, Latte Lath, should have probably scored. He was sort of away, clean through. He touched let him down a little bit and probably should have got his shot away a little bit earlier. But I thought his overall game was pretty good. He was very sharp. He caused a lot of problems to Mikkel Helic. His movement was good and some of his sort of link-up play was excellent. And he had a real desire to do well as well, and his work rate was tremendous. So hopefully Borough have got a little bit of something there. They need to do a bit more, as do Town, in the transfer market. I still think they're a little bit light up front. Obviously, they lost Akpom and Archer, and I still think that, you know, if Johnny Howson gets an injury, they do lack that sort of midfield general. But yeah, from a Town perspective, it was good to have a look at the new lad as well, Berzog. He's a real big size and showed his pace and put himself about in his brief cameo. Got a booking as well. They'll be hoping to do a couple of bits of business as well before the end. Maybe a midfielder and perhaps another striker even. And so it looks like Jordan Rose is destined for elsewhere at some point.
Yeah, I think that for me is the big encouragement to hear Leon talking about both the new forwards in that sense, because you felt and still feel that with both of those sides that's really what they need most of all, that bit of cutting edge. Obviously Silvera is in the same situation as Lath. He's a striker, you know, like we talked about with the Sheffield Wednesday players, learning English football, you know, learning senior football to a degree with Silvera. And he's not in the same category as, for example, Keenan Davis, who's been strongly linked with Hull, where you know what you're going to get with him as a championship striker. These guys and Bergzog will both need a bit of time. But, you know, Middlesbrough, you feel this transfer window is all about, you know, replacing all the goals that they lost at the end of last season. And Huddersfield, you know, as Leon said, they played well against Leicester, but, you know, for large parts of the game, by all accounts, they play well against Plymouth, but they've been let down by crucial errors at both ends of the field. So if they can get that cutting edge, I believe they've got the players. I mean, you know, Leon mentioned Matty Pearson there. That's the sort of player you want to be relying on at Championship level. Yeah. So's Lee Nichols, so's Mikkel Helic, who's had a couple of great and a couple of terrible moments in the first couple of weeks of the season. But, you know, you'd bank on him.
You know, you bank on Hogg and players like that.
Tom Lees so, come back as well, yeah.
And Tom Lees again falls into that category. So if they can get Solbert Thomas, you know, providing the supply that we all know he's capable of, they just need somebody to finish it off. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's such a shame. It's been a theme with every team we talked about in this podcast. Leon's alluded to it. The season doesn't really start until mid-September, and it's just. Yeah. It's such a shame that there's so many points gone out of the way in you know, by the time the league actually takes shape, and so many of the Yorkshire teams, unfortunately, are going to be in the position where they're starting from a position of weakness. But if both of these clubs can have a good last week of the window, there's no reason why they can't kick on and you know, not be stuck in relegation battles for the season. Certainly Middlesbrough shouldn't be. And say Huddersfield, if they're just able to make a couple of shrewd signings, they should be better than that as well. I'm not convinced they are right now, but I think they should be able to get to that point.
Yeah.
I think that's probably arguably more important than the last couple of games, really, isn't it, Stuart? There's some key bits of business for quite a few sides, Rotherham as well, they look desperately like, don't they? And
that's right.
Hull are trying to sign a few players off for different reasons, but yeah, that's the big thing for me. You know, I'm not struggling to think of many other ends to summer transfer windows that have probably been as important for quite a few of our clubs, and obviously Sheffield United a bit further up as well.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wobschall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.